Hey, welcome to Oasis Singles. My name's Pastor Dave, and I'm so excited you're here. By the way, this site is not just about Christian dating service reviews and so forth, but it's also about life advice, all things Christian single. We have articles, we have interactive ways that you can get in touch with each other, and we also have podcasts that are all about the Christian life. I hope you enjoy our site, and I hope you enjoy the podcast you're about to listen to right now. God bless.
You see, a lot of folks have the mistaken idea that men and women, guys and gals, are basically the same. This has been promoted, especially during the last three decades, that they're really basically the same. Well, there's a sense in which we're the same. I mean, typically, both males and females have two arms, two legs, two eyes, two ears, one mouth, 10 fingers, 10 toes. Yeah. And even in the spiritual arena, spiritual realm, we're nearly identical. Just about everything else, however, is different. Not right or wrong, not better or worse, just different. For instance, almost all men find purpose outside of ourselves. Women typically find it within themselves. A man's primary fear is rejection or failure, whereas a woman's primary fear often is the loss of love. Men tend to be visual. In fact, the primary sex organ for men is our eyes. Women tend to be auditory. Their primary sex organ is their ears. A man's worth is based around what he does. Whereas for a female, it's based on who she is. Male relationships are established on shared activities, side to side, bowling, golf, hunting, unless you're Dick Cheney. But anyway, just side to side. Women's primary relationships, female relationships, are based on shared feelings, face to face. In fact, when it comes to male and female differences, one authority on this makes this observation. Men snore more. They fight more. They change their minds more often than women do. Their blood is redder. The daylight vision is superior. They have thicker skins and longer vocal cords. Their metabolic rate is higher. Many of them are left-handed. They feel pain less than women. They age earlier but wrinkle later. Their immunity against disease is weaker. They talk about themselves less, but worry about themselves more. But it's still great to be a guy. Oh, I got some great stuff here, folks. I've just been waiting to use this. I have a whole sermon just for these quotes. Not really, but why it's great to be a guy. This is great. Phone conversations last 30 seconds. Second, you know useful stuff about tanks and airplanes. A 5-day vacation requires only one suitcase. Oh, old friends don't care if you've lost or gained weight. When clicking through the channels, you don't have to stop on every shot of someone crying. You can go to the bathroom alone. Would you like to go with me? Oh, no. You can kill your own food. Next, you can be showered and ready in 10 minutes. There are some exceptions. If someone forgets to invite you to something, they can still be your friend. Your underwear costs $7.50 for a pack of three. Flowers and duct tape fix everything. Three pair of shoes are more than enough. You don't care if someone doesn't notice your new haircut. You can watch a game in silence for hours without your buddy thinking, he must be mad at me. Told you it's great to be a guy. You can admire Clint Eastwood without having to starve yourself to look like him. You don't pass on the dessert and then mooch off somebody else. If you don't call your buddy when you said you would, he won't tell your friends you've changed. If another guy shows at the party with the same outfit, you might become lifelong buddies. You think the idea of putting that small ankle-biting dog is funny. Okay, don't send me any emails on that one, okay? And if you retain water, it's in a canteen. Oh, well, so. Yeah, it's just great to be a guy. And all the guys said, right on, amen, right ever. All right. Yeah. This is a guy church. There's even a wish list. Now, last week, we did it for the gals. There was a wish list for gals. There's a great wish list for guys. Sometimes we're not thinking of you. Deal with it. Okay. If you want to know what we're thinking, be prepared to talk about such topics as naval lint, shotgun formations, or NASCAR. Shopping is not a sport, and no, we're never going to think of it that way. When we have to go somewhere, absolutely anything you wear is fine. Really. Just ask for what you want. Let me be clear on this one. Subtle hints don't work. Strong hints don't work. Obvious hints don't work. Just say it. We don't remember dates. Marked birthdays, anniversaries on the calendar remind us frequently beforehand. By the way, yes and no are perfectly acceptable answers to almost every question. Anything we said 6 months ago is inadmissible in an argument. In fact, all comments become null and void after 7 days. We are not mind readers, and we never will be. Our lack of mind reading is not proof of how little we care about you. And lastly, if something we said can be interpreted two ways, and one of them makes you sad or angry, we meant the other one. Well, what we're going to do this morning is we're going to return to the greatest love story ever told, the Song of Solomon, to give equal time to kind of give the other side of the story as to what guys want. We looked at that last week for what women want and what they need. And today we're going to look at what guys want, what they expect, what they need from a woman, a wife. And what do we see here, what do we see here taking place between Solomon and his girlfriend to become his fiancée, to become his wife, that indicates what a man needs? Well, we see in here how this woman discovers that her guy, like most guys, has a need for her to be giving him space. You might want to jot this down in the back of the program. Giving him space, or what someone might call or refer to as autonomy or independence. Now, let me sort of sidebar that for a moment and clarify what I am not meaning so we can clearly see what I am saying, what we'll see here from the Song of Solomon. We're not talking about just the guy goes off and is irresponsible, unreliable, and doesn't care about his gal, about his girl, has zero concern for his fiance or his wife. We're not talking about that kind of independence. I want you to be married to me, but I'm not going to act married to you. We're not talking about that. But what it does mean is to have some downtime. Time alone, time by ourselves. Now, here's how it plays out in the Song of Solomon, chapter 3, starting with verse 1 through 4. It says, one night, as I lay in bed, this is the Shulamite woman, Solomon's fiance. I yearned deeply for my lover, but he did not come. So I said to myself, I will get up now and roam the city, searching for him in all the streets and squares, but my search was in vain. The watchmen stopped me as they made their rounds, and I said to them, have you seen him anywhere, this one I love so much? A little while later, I found him and I held him, and I didn't let him go until I had brought him to my childhood home and introduced him to my parents. Gotcha. I added that last part in case. However, later in chapter 5, verse 6, she says, I opened to my lover, but he was gone. I yearned for even his voice. I searched for him, but I couldn't find him anywhere. I called to him, but there was no reply. And then still later in chapter 6, verse 1, others ask, where is your lover gone? We will help you find him. And verse 2, she says, oh, my beloved went to his garden to graze his flock and to gather lilies. Gather lilies. I don't know exactly all what that means, but I know, you know, he's out taking care of the flock, the herd. Let me make a statement that I hope that you might want to jot down, because I think this is really, really true about guy and gal relationships. What love is to a woman, freedom is to a man. What love is to a woman, freedom is, space is to a man. Sometimes it is expressed by our engaging in some sport, some hobby. I know when I first started going to a gym, a local gym in Hawaii, and I went in there and I was sort of like the deer in the headlights because I had no clue about the equipment. I had to stop running because of joint swelling. I went into it and this Filipino guy, he looked like Charles Atlas. He was 75 and he was built like a Charles Atlas. It's incredible. And I just looked around at this stuff, and he said, you want me to teach you how to lift weights? That's how he talked. He said, yeah, I don't know anything. And these guys that were in there were like big Samoans, big Tongans. I looked like the 98-pound weakling next to the muscle-bound beach buddies, you know? In fact, one time I was working out, and these guys came up, oh, good coconuts, man. You know, whatever you say. And I remember Terry making a comment to me one day. She said, you know, you don't have to do that for me. I said, I know that. I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me. But since then, she said, this is pretty good. Anyway. Sometimes it's a hobby. Sometimes it's yard work. I enjoyed many, many times doing yard work because it just gave me a chance to get on the mower or push the mower and just free my mind. Waxing the car, reading the paper, going to the movies, watching the news on TV. When I come home at 5:30 or 5 o'clock, Terry knows that I just like to watch the news. I just watch the news. And whatever she has to say, I just wait for the commercial. Hit the mute, yeah. Then it comes back on. And we just understand that. It gives a guy a chance to clear his mind and kind of reflect, disengage. Maybe just escape from the stress, the pressures, the problems of life. Now, sidebar on that, sometimes the women, the wife, the mother, well, hey, I'd like that too. I've been able to deal with. No, your week was last week. This week it's the guys. But I realize the road runs both ways, so if you weren't here last week, order the CD. Or go on iTunes on our website and listen to it. What women want. But this is about guys. And we may or may not even talk about it. When we come in, you may say, well, what's wrong? Because you can kind of read the face. And our answer may be, nothing. Now, maybe later we'll talk about it. But please do not interpret or assume our silence means that our relationship is going south. It's just that guys need space. And they feel like, we feel like we're being smothered, mother smother. There's pushback. There's got to be some elasticity, space. So whether you understand it or not, by giving him space, you will have a much happier man and husband in your life. Well, let's look at a second truth of what men need that comes out of the Song of Solomon. Men also have a need for, secondly, being genuinely admired. Being genuinely admired. That is, of having his girl, you know, carry the flag in his parade, as opposed to raining on it. that he's respected, that we're appreciated, accepted, and encouraged. You know, to hear some encouraging words. You know, not like the salesman, you know, he's been away from home for a week. He's just dog tired. He's homesick. He's worn out. He goes into a cafe for some breakfast, and when the waitress came to take his order, he said, "I'd like 2 scrambled eggs, coffee, and a kind word." Well, after bringing his eggs and coffee, he then said, "Well, what about the kind word?" To which she said, "Don't eat them eggs." Well, it's more than that. But here's what admiration and respect, here's what it looks like, here's what it sounds like. The Song of Solomon, chapter 3, verse 9 through 11. It says, "King Solomon is carried on a throne," and she's saying this, "is carried on a throne made of the finest wood." It's like she's talking about his car. "Its posts are covered with silver, and over it is cloth embroidered with gold. Its cushions are covered with purple cloth, lovingly woven by the women of Jerusalem. Women of Zion, come and see King Solomon. He is wearing the crown that his mother placed on his head on his wedding day and on the day of his gladness and joy." In chapter 5, verse 10, Message paraphrases her words this way. She says, "My dear lover glows with health. He's one in a million. There's no one quite like him." She's admiring him. Then verse 16, it says, "His words are kisses. His kisses words. Everything about him delights me, thrills me through and through." Now this truth, you know, being genuinely admired, isn't something that's simply illustrated for us in the Song of Solomon. Gals, it is actually something expected and even commanded in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33, especially from the Amplified Bible, which amplifies the Greek meaning. Paul writes in Ephesians 5:33, he says, "Let the wife see that she respects and reverences her husband, that she notices him and regards him, honors him and prefers him and esteems him, and that she defers to him, praises him, loves and admires him exceedingly." You know, I've had gals say to me, "Well, if he loved me like Jesus loved the church, then I'd do that." What's interesting in marriages is that while men are to be providing leadership, it's interesting that God appeals to the wife to be the response, to be the initiator in this, because men tend to be responders to praise and admiration. It triggers in them a desire to want to lead when they have this kind of positive response from his wife. I have a classic example of what happened with Carrie and me in early years of our marriage, where I was being irresponsible. Not, you know, I was out winning the world to Jesus, you know, out till 2 in the morning, you know, sharing Christ's day. What's wrong with that, right? And but I was abandoning Terry. I mean, she'd have dinner at 5, and by 6:30 I'd come home. By then the dinner's cold and she's hot. And yet I just was so caught up in the gears of my work. And Terry learned this principle early on in our marriage about her responding to God instead of me and trying to be to me what she needed to be, as opposed to trying to change me to be what I needed to be, because that didn't work. And I, unbeknownst to me, she was going through a Bible study that deals with how to respond to the husband who's a jerk. That wasn't the title of the study, but you know. In any case, I remember I came home one night and I was late, as usual. And just being irresponsible, basically. Been married 4 years. And we were in grad school at the time, and I came in late, and I already kind of knew the drill. You know, I already knew what was going to happen. She'd say this, so I'd say that, and back and forth it would go, and I would try to end up making her feel guilty about what I'd done. Not good, but that's kind of how you figure it, you know, the game. Well, unbeknownst to me, Terry had been learning about how to respond differently to me. So I open the door, kind of throw my hat in, literally, figuratively, to see what happens. And we were having spaghetti that night. Spaghetti is good when it's hot, not great when it's cold. But I was late, and I threw my hat in, and, "Hi." And she threw the door open. hi, come in. She grabs me and hugs me. And I take her by the arms. You can ask her. I take her by the arms and push her back and say, what's going on? This is not the expected response. It's like she had reprogrammed or something. All the buttons were different now or something. Oh, nothing. Come on in. Just let me heat up the spaghetti and get the noodles hot again. And so I'm sitting there, gospel truth. I'm sitting there looking at her, wondering what is going on. Well, God used her response to me to make me fully aware, because God used that to make me aware of how badly I was failing as the leader. But she was taking the initiative. And you see, despite all the talk and the jokes about how, men and males are wired, the honest truth is that males have fragile egos. Yeah, we do. Especially when it comes to issues that relate to our masculinity or identity. And because, it feels like we're facing giants and we're slaying dragons, of pessimism and worry and fear and insecurity, we do need as much admiration and respect and support and encouragement as you can give. In fact, Proverbs 14:1 gives kind of a warning label to gals. It says that a woman's family is held together by her wisdom, but it can be destroyed by her foolishness. Or as another translation renders it, a stupid one tears it down with her own hands. I'm not about to do this. And she literally pulls the house down around her head because of how she responds. This is why Proverbs 12:25 reminds us that worry weighs a person down, but an encouraging word cheers a person up. Men are responders in this respect. Yet along with, giving them space and being genuinely admired, it's got to be genuine. It can't be fake or manipulative or guys, we can see through all that. But it's got to be genuine. The guy, the husband, also wants his gal, his wife, to be looking her best. Just looking her best. Now let me kind of leave that on the screen for a moment and say something. Because this is an area, and Terry and I were talking about this, this is an area that creates a lot of insecurity for females. And let me say what looking her best does not mean. It does not mean that you look like a Victoria's Secret model. It does not mean you look like some babe out of Hollywood. Or some airbrushed model from some magazine or something like that. But it is being someone that he is proud of. When you got married, he did not marry you because he hated you. You look great for him. Now here's how Solomon puts it in chapter 4, verse 1. My darling, you are lovely, so very lovely. Then in verse 7 from the Message, paraphrases his words as saying, he says, you're beautiful from head to toe, my dear love, beautiful beyond compare, absolutely flawless. And then in chapter 6, 4 through 9, he says, your beauty is too much for me, man. I'm in over my head. I'm not used to this. I can't take it in. Your smile is generous and full, expressive and strong and clean. There's no one like her on earth. Never has been, never will. She is a woman beyond compare. And finally, in chapter 7, starting with verse 1, he says that she is shapely and graceful. Your limbs are elegant. Your body is a chalice. Your skin is silken and tawny. Your breasts are like fawns. Your neck is curved and slender. Your eyes are deep with mystery, quintessentially feminine. Your profile turns all heads, commanding attention. Your beauty within and without is absolute, dear lover, close companion. You say, well, all right, fine, Dave. Some of the wheels are turning inside gals' heads. They're thinking, well, what about that verse somewhere in the New Testament? I read it somewhere about inner beauty. That's right, and that's true. In fact, that's even more true. Because someone can look great on the outside and be a shrew. Just like guys can look great on the outside and be a jerk. But when it comes to inner beauty, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 and 4 says, don't be concerned about the outward beauty that depends on fancy hairstyles, expensive jewelry, or beautiful clothes. You should be known for the beauty that comes from within, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is so precious to God. In fact, when you think about it, Solomon's really affirming both elements. So obviously, what really counts is one's internal attitude and character. That's ultimately what makes the difference. And yet, what wins the guy over may be, well, something as simple as simply your smile. Solomon says that. Your smile. The clothes you wear or don't wear. The twinkle in your eyes. The kind of nonverbal communication that a guy and a gal, a husband and a wife, have that communicate across the room, across the table. The truth is, of course, that life brings sickness and aging and sagging, body changes that are beyond our ability to change, even to predict or improve. And yet what a guy just really wants is for his girl, his fiance, his wife, just to look her best, both internally and externally. It creates a great deal of security, guys, when you tell your bride, you tell your wife of 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you look great. I'm telling you, when you tell her that, she blossoms. You look great. Because she wants to look great for you. And yet what every man and husband wants, along with what we see now, is for his wife to be providing sexual fulfillment. Some of you were thinking this would be the number one need. In fact, you thought there would only be one point to the sermon. Nope. By the way, providing sexual fulfillment is more than just having sex or the physical act of you just being there while he does his thing. It is being emotionally and mentally engaged. Now, by the way, guys, for us to remember, keep in the back of our heads that, as Kevin Lehman says in the book that's out on the book table, sex begins in the kitchen. So just kind of, you know, file that away. And by the way, pick up that book. Because there's a number of great books and resources that deal with this sexual fulfillment thing. Great resources. We have some books out there. You can go on our website and link it into Amazon.com. Intended for Pleasure is one of them. The Act of Love, Solomon on Sex, Sex Begins in the Kitchen, just a lot of great stuff. Not tawdry, not sleazy. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 3 through 5, it tells that the husband should not deprive his wife of sexual intimacy, which is her right as a married woman. Nor should the wife deprive her husband. The wife gives authority over her body to her husband. And the husband also gives authority over his body to his wife. So do not deprive each other of sexual relations. Now, he gives a caveat there in the text because he talks about prayer, and sometimes you just want to be so focused on that element that you don't engage in anything else. But then afterwards, he says you should come together again so that Satan won't be able to tempt them because of their lack of self-control. Now, sometimes in talking with guys, the question comes up, well, am I undersexed? Because, you know, hey, once a month. I'm thinking, once a month? And other guys will say, well, maybe I'm oversexed. I have to have it every night of the week or every day. Well, you know, I'm not going to get into that because I'm not a sex therapist, but I'll recommend a book to you that was helpful to me and to other men and to other women about men. And that's the book by Archibald Hart called The Sexual Man. That's also available on the book table, and you can order that as well. But here's how this looks and sounds like from the Song of Solomon, chapter 1. This is the woman speaking. She says, kiss me full in the mouth. Yes. Verse 4, take me away with you. Let's run off together, an elopement with my king lover. Then in chapter 2, verse 4, he took me home with him for a festive meal, but his eyes feasted on me. Then chapter 4, verses 9 through 15 says, you've captured my heart. You looked at me and I fell in love. The kisses of your lips are honey, my love, dear lover and friend. Now he's talking about her and to her. You're a secret garden, a private and pure fountain. That is a poetic allusion to her private sexual parts. Body and soul, you are paradise. Then in chapter 7, starting with verse 6, you are tall and supple, and your full breasts are like sweet clusters of dates. Your breath clean and cool like fresh mint. Your tongue and lips are like the best wine. You know, sometimes people kind of wonder where God is. This didn't typically surface in most bedroom scenes about God, but it's interesting that Bible commentators suggest that it is actually God speaking, not some other audience, in chapter 5, verse 1, where he says, "Eat, my friends, drink, and become intoxicated with expressions of love." God is putting his blessing in this skin-on-skin relationship, because sex is his idea in the context of marriage. It's something to celebrate. So along with giving him space and, you know, being genuinely admired and looking your best, providing sexual fulfillment, what men also want is for he and his girlfriend, his fiance, his wife, to be enjoying shared activities, doing things together, enjoying shared activities. For instance, in chapter 2, verse 8, through 10 says, "Look, listen, there's my lover, vaulting the mountains, leaping the hills. My lover is like a young stag, virile. Get up, my dear friend, come to me." Then in verse 14, "Come, leave your seclusion." He says, "Come out in the open." And then in chapter 4, verse 8, "Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Leave Lebanon behind and come. Let your high mountain hide, leave your high mountain hideaway. Abandon your wilderness seclusion." And lastly, in chapter 7, 11 to 13, "Come, dear lover, let's tramp through the countryside. Let's sleep at some wayside inn and rise early and listen to bird song. Let's look for wildflowers in bloom. Let's go look at the eagles up," Grafton, whatever. What do you and yours enjoy doing together? I want you to turn to your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, or just the person next to you. This is a safe question. And ask each other, what is it you enjoy doing or would enjoy me doing with you? Take a few moments to do that, all right? Just turn and talk about that. Some of you gals are saying, shopping. Okay, that's good. That's enough. All right. Terry and I, on the weekends, we enjoy walking. She walks every day. I just applaud my bride of 38 years for all that she does. And I'm not just saying this because I'm supposed to say it or be some role model. I say this in private, not just publicly. But she does that every day, and she lets me walk with her. We get to walk together kind of thing on weekends, 3 miles up and down hills. It's a great time to talk. Now, if you drive by us when we're walking, however, if you're in a car and you see us, and some of you have seen us walking, you notice I walk in front of her, not because it's an Asian practice, but I have longer legs and a longer stride, and in order for it to be a power walk for me, you know, I did, and so her little legs, you know, trying to keep up with me, and we're talking. we are talking. So don't interpret that any differently than that. But sometimes, you know, couples enjoy running together, doing sports together, going to movies together. Begin, just ask. What would you like to do? Yeah, that's fine. Now, sometimes, you know, we kind of joke about the shopping thing, but frankly, I don't I mean, when I hunt, that's a good word for it. When I shop, I hunt. I get it, kill it, take it home. And Terry, she likes to graze. Every store, every. And that's fine. And I, in love language, I just learned that, you know, that's what she likes to do. And she likes to dress, you know, for me. And so I think that's fine. And so sometimes I'll sit on the husband chair. I look for it. Of course, one joke you've heard me say this before, one time they didn't have a husband chair. There was a mannequin stand, so I sat next to the mannequin, and Terry missed me. She left the store and cell phoned me. Where are you? Oh, I'm sitting by the mannequin. She had to come back and get me. But one author on marriage says this: husbands place surprising importance on having their wives as recreational companions. The commercial caricature of men out in the wilderness and a beer in hand saying, it doesn't get any better than this, is false. You know, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, we read that the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a companion, a helpmeet, who will help him. Companion. A complementer idea, not a competitor. A completer, not a combatant. You know, sometimes women will say of men, you think you're God's gift to women. No, actually, women, you are God's gift to man. Thank you. The Bible just said that. It wasn't good for the man to be alone. I will make him, God says, I will make him a companion. And God brought her to the man. You are God's gift to the man. And then in Proverbs 18:22, it tells us the man who finds a wife finds a treasure and receives favor from the Lord. The challenge is for each of us, husbands and wives, to treat each other like the treasure and the gift that we are. Pray with me, will you? Father, I thank you that you are very much into relationships. And for us to try to get it right as husbands and wives, and what men want and need, and what women want and need. So, Father, this morning, take the truths that surface for us out of this book, your love story to us. And we begin to weave those truths into the fabric of our relationship. Not waiting for our wife to do something that she should do, but we'll just start doing it, God. We looked at last week. But for us as the gals, as we begin doing those things that you show us from your word, irrespective of what our guy does, because you tell us to do it, we're going to do it. We sang earlier, Father, about you call us friend. And yet even in your word, you qualified that. You said, we are your friends if we do what you tell us to do. Father, help us to rise to that challenge today. And beyond this day, the weeks, days and weeks, months to come. We ask it in the strong name of Jesus. And all the men said, amen.